Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kenya. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com, also our Detroit Magazine's 2020 second most beloved sports columnist or blogger, trailing only Mitch Albom. And don't forget, the voting is still ongoing, or maybe it's closed.
It's actually closed. Oh, it's, okay. It's closed.
We'll stop voting for Eric.
You know, what's funny is that when we did our podcast last time, it had actually already closed then too, because I didn't know about it till you had mentioned it.
It was like a month ago, right? We did our last podcast.
Yeah, it was a two weeks ago we did our last podcast. We missed last week because of my daughter's birthday, but yeah, it was closed already. Apparently, they had a very short window of when it was open, and people got the vote. I was not even aware of it till you mentioned it. So we'll find out. We'll find out in June if I've lost my popularity or not.
Yeah, well, you may have, but hopefully everybody got to the polls, you know, before they closed. We didn't do any of this last time. You know, there was no shameless shilling for you last year. Well, it happened organically.
It's fine. And we missed the window anyways this year. So it's not like nothing we're doing right now is going to help anyways. So
that should be the mantra for the show, that we do nothing to help ourselves. Yeah.
You know, our reviews keep coming in, though, which is nice. We usually talk about those at the end, but, you know, we're up to 357 on iTunes, which is awesome. Two more written reviews.
Floating up. That's good.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. So it's nice to see that we're still getting some recognition from listeners and people taking the time to it's awesome. So
maybe we should skip weeks more often. Keep going up.
Well, it's going to get busy. It's going to get busy real quick because the draft is a month away, or less than a month away, depending on when you listen, right? So
steamrolling.
Yeah, so we're going to be the whole searching for a new GM and searching for a new coach just set me back so far. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'm still doing stuff now that I'm normally doing, like, in February leading up to the combine. So I am behind. I feel like I'm constantly behind, and I'm working as fast as I can to try and learn these guys. But, you know, we're only going to have a couple more of these podcasts before the draft starts. So we're going to have to get into that, you know. Like, I think today we'll make sure everybody knows where the team's at. And then next week we'll kick into that. You know, we'll do offense and then defense, and we'll see where we're at after that. But, yeah, I think we really got to start diving in on these draft prospects pretty quickly here.
Yeah, it's got to be killing you that there's no combine. Oh, we have these pro day numbers with these made up 40 times for some reason. They use different stopwatches at pro day.
Now, I have a couple ideas on that. One is that I totally agree that there's itchy trigger fingers on the stopwatches, and it's amazing how everyone is running sub 4.4. But the other thing is, I do think there's something to the fact that running on your home surface
turf
is going to help you.
Home turf.
but then also, when you think about what they go through at the combine, they got medical checks and interviews, and their days start at like 6 a.m. and they end at like 1 or 2 in the morning, and then they get like 4 hours of sleep, and then they're back up and they're doing it again. And then the drills are the last thing they do. So by the time they actually get on the field after 4 days of like getting just a few hours sleep a night, they're pretty tired. So it's not surprising that they don't run at their peak performance after on day 5 of the combine, as opposed to being fresh, getting prepped, and then going into a pro day ready to put out your maximum output. So I do think there's a lot of, you got to take a lot of this with a grain of salt, but I do think that the improvement has to do with the format as well. So it's totally interesting. Everything's out of the box. I'm pulling information from everywhere. There's no consistent source, and it's tough. It's a lot tougher having it all spread out like this for certain.
The league should have came up with some like pro day czars that went around and made sure everything was done a certain way, so all the nerds could get the same, you know, information at the very end, like in at least a consistent format, you know, in a database.
Dude, I completely agree, because if you want to do this format, that's fine. But I do think if they like, okay, because there's a lot of things that are going to change after the whole COVID stuff, you know, is behind us, and we're starting to look like back into normalcy with these, with the NFL. And I do think there's going to be things that they've learned from the last 12 months that they're going to carry over into the future. And maybe one of those things is that prospects are going to see it's valuable to be able to do these things at their pro day as opposed to the combine. And maybe they'll change how the combine operates, or maybe they'll have more uniformed, ways of collecting data. It'd be nice if they outputted that to the public, as opposed to just like generating info for teams. But yeah, I do wonder how this offseason is going to reflect some of the off seasons in the future, because the NFL is going to look at these situations and say, this is better, this is better, I like this more, and they're going to pick and choose some things that I think are going to stick around.
Well, isn't this all just going to go away once everybody's got GPS tags in their uniforms?
Sure.
In college?
Sure. Yeah, no, that's
they'll know, like they'll have all the speed information they know they'll need, and leaping ability and all that. They'll just see what they see it on film, and they'll have data to back up what's happening in the film.
The tricky part is that there's really no substitute for being able to watch somebody play in person, and scouts were not allowed on campuses this year. Mm-hmm. And because of that, the pro days have been really the only opportunity that you've got to see a player actually like in person. Now, you would think, okay, maybe they saw them a year prior when they were like a sophomore or maybe a junior or something like that. But you don't get access to those players as scouts. You only get access to the draft eligible players. And so it's really interesting to see, like, will the NFL start expanding pro days to include younger players, so that if there is, and allow scouts to talk to some of the younger players, so that if there is something else that prevents them from being able to get on campus, or, the teams will have a better idea of like who players are. I think it will also benefit the players because they'll get a better assessment of what their status is. You know, every year we see all these juniors jump for the NFL and then they don't get drafted, and then maybe they don't make it out of camp. Whereas they go in thinking, okay, I'm going to be a day two pick. I'm going to earn a starting job, because they're getting bad information. They're getting a lot of yes men and people telling them how great they are because they're a big fish in a college town. But then, when they make that, if they talk to an NFL scout, they may say, hey, look, you're not ready. This time doesn't cut it, or you're not nuanced in this area here and you need to be better. The best example that I can think of, do you remember Ernest Shazor?
Yeah.
Who played safety for Michigan about, 15 years ago or so.
At least, yep.
He was a monster safety. He was so good in college. He was a multi-year starter. He was fantastic in college. Jumped to the NFL as a junior, and then went completely undrafted, never made it to the NFL, and then completely skipped out. If he would have stayed in college another year and developed his game a little bit more, there's a chance he could have made it. You know what I mean? And there's a bunch, there's players like that every year that run into that problem, where if the NFL starts expanding who has access to these pro days, then maybe you can prevent stuff like that. Maybe you can prevent players from going in early, and you'll get a better pool of athletes and a better understanding and better opportunities for players to actually be successful instead of, jumping early and then flopping.
Ernest Shazor, he signed in 2006 with the Orlando Predators, never played a game for them.
I think he was in Arizona.
Arizona Cardinals, 2005. Good memory.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But he didn't make it, but yeah.
All right, so one thing I wanted to note about everything you said there is, yeah, I think you're right, when it comes to like the big, almost all that stuff you mentioned there. It also makes me think that when the draft rolls around, and if the Lions trade down, it's not that big of a deal, because who knows anything about any of these players anyways?
Yeah,
they know a lot less than they have in all these previous years.
Yeah, it's really tricky. It's really tricky. Could be why
which is why I think the next two first round draft picks they're getting from the Rams are valuable, more valuable sure. than everybody's saying they are.
I mean I've seen that school of thought come from other people as well, and I agree with it. I still think getting draft picks this year is valuable because they need to build. But there's definitely value. Look, this year they have 6 picks. Next year they're going to have at least 12, it looks like right now. So, and we'll see how things, you know, things are always fluid. But they are definitely stockpiling for the next 2 years of draft picks because I think they're anticipating having a better, you know, base of knowledge on players. This year, you know, look, Brad Holmes is going into this draft with scouts that are Detroit Lions scouts. You know what I mean? Just to kind of like lay this out, because I've had this question a few times. So what happens is that when Holmes gets hired, he gets to bring in a couple of key people at the top, which were Ray Agnew and John Dorsey, right? Everyone else, he kind of kept in place. A couple of the top guys got fired or left because they wanted to take other positions, like Ken O'Brien or O'Brien.
Kyle O'Brien.
Kyle O'Brien went to the Giants. Jimmy Ray, the third, left as well. I'm not sure where he landed. But Dorsey took Ray's spot. Agnew took O'Brien's spot. And so that, but the rest of the guys are still here. And so what they're doing right now is they're typically have a contract that ends in May, right? And they've been compiling information throughout the year on players. And then Agnew now comes in and says, this is what I'm looking for. These are my parameters. This is what I'm trying to do. And now all of these scouts are having to adapt their style to a new GM, take the information that they have, convert it over to what Brad Holmes is looking for. The scouts that can do this the most efficient scout the traits that Holmes wants at the different positions and whatnot. Those scouts will stay. And the ones who don't, those scouts will be fired after the draft when their contract ends in May, and then Holmes will bring new scouts in. Okay, so right now the Lions have a very experienced scouting base. I actually think they have the most collective years as a scouting department in the entire NFL. But not all of those guys are going to stay. Some of them are. Some of them have already been identified by Holmes as he said, look, this person helped me here, this person helped me here. Those guys are going to stay, right? But there's a whole bunch of these other area scouts and like college scouts that are all going to that right now they are scouting for their jobs. And so Holmes isn't familiar with them. A year from now, he will understand what these scouts can do. He'll understand where the scouts are good. He'll have brought his own guys in. And so again, a year from now, it's going to be a much more, you know, dynamic front office, because you're going to have more guys that Holmes has approved of in place. You're going to have more picks. You're going to have better understanding of players. So yeah, a year from now there's a ton of advantages to stockpiling draft picks for now. Right now it's, you know, they're making do with what they have. And look, this is standard. This isn't something that's unique to the Lions. This is happening all across the league right now as well. It's happening, you know, with all the other GMs that had to be replaced, but everyone is kind of scouting for their jobs. And so, you know, how much does Holmes trust these guys? How much does he trust himself? It's going to be an interesting offseason. I do think he's going to try and compile more picks, but I also wouldn't be surprised if you see him try to trade down and land some picks in next year's draft as well.
All right. Let's move on. Let's go into the Rod Woodsheds. First time we've visited it in a long time.
Yeah.
That's because the owners' meetings were just recently held. Rod, Sheila, and Mike Disner, was it the vice president of business and football operations or football administration or something
like that.
They were at the owners' meetings.
He's a salary cap guru, right? And there's a lot of salary cap implications at this owners meeting because the deficit they just took, because the TV deals are coming in, right? So there's all these financial implications, and that's why Disner's there.
All right, so the big one, at least for all of us fans, as the 17th game was added for this upcoming 2021 season.
Yeah, so that's interesting, right? So the CBA says you can only have 20 games in a season, and before it's been 16 regular and 4 preseason. Well, now with the regular season going to 17, that means they have to eliminate one of the preseason games, so it's down to 3 now. But what's interesting from a scheduling standpoint is they're not actually changing the start point of either. They're going to keep the regular season starting at where it is. They're going to keep the preseason starting as where it is. So there's going to be a larger gap in between the third game and the regular season. And then there's the postseason will get pushed back a week.
Yeah, we're going to get the Super Bowl's creeping towards mid-February now.
I mean, and, look, how you feel about that? Are you in favor of the 17th game?
Well, for the player's sake, no. For me as a fan's sake, sure. You know, because this, you know, that'll help shorten careers, I'm sure. Also, we're probably going to see more teams when they've locked up their division or whatever. They're going to spend more time, like, not playing guys. You know, they might have another chance to do that. At the other side of that, a team that's rallying at the end of the season now is an extra game to try to, you know, make up that last game, you know, make up that last game to push themselves into the playoffs. That CBA you talked about, how it has to be 20 games, and for basically all of our lives, it's been 16 regular season, 4 preseason games. Mm-hmm. But back in the 70s, you know, back when OJ was rushing for 2,000 yards, they had 14 regular season games and then 6 preseason games. like the third of the year was chewed up by preseason games. So it's bad. It's good that the preseason's shrunk down to 3 games, you know, like they didn't make it 21 games. I don't like the layout that, you know, the AFC's, I do get the competitive reasoning for it, at least when it comes to playoff seeding, that the AFC will host all 16 games this year and then the NFC will host all 16 next year. But I would guess, because I'm guessing part of this is COVID, wouldn't you think the ultimate goal is that the 16 games be played at neutral sites? Like, here's where they're going to play in London and Mexico City, and now you can play, you know, they're going to play games in Canada, Japan, you know, France, Germany, you name it. That opens that door, doesn't it?
It does, because all 32 teams are going to have to host an international game over the next 8 years, right? So at some point, the Lions are going to have a home game somewhere not in the United States, okay? It could be Mexico, it could be Germany, it could be, you know, wherever, right? But that's part of, I think, where they're trying to, you know, push this 17th game off to, right? So they want to keep it so that no matter what, NFL teams are going to have 8 home games every season. Okay. So if the AFC is hosting, the Lions will still have 8 home games. If the NFC is hosting, the Lions will have 9 home games and maybe one of them will be overseas once every 8 years. Right. So it's, they're trying to like balance it out that way. I do think it would be interesting if they would incorporate other ways to, you know, get rid of the home field advantage. You know, there's all kinds of ideas floated out there. I don't know if the NFL would ever opt for any of them. But like talking about like using college campuses and stuff like that, but I can't imagine NFL would move away from the money. You know what I mean? Like they would need some sort of investment that they're going to get back from those colleges that equals what they're getting from the NFL Europe, you know, and stuff like that, right? Those other places. So I don't know. It's a new world, Joe. It's a new world. And so we have to get used to saying 17 game seasons. And I do want to touch on one other point though. You had mentioned that it's not great for the players. From a health standpoint, I completely agree.
I'm sure they'll make more money. Hopefully they make more money.
100%. Yeah. What's going to happen is everyone's game bonuses are going to be extended by one game, or if they have game checks written into their contracts, they're all going to be extended by one game. So the players are going to make more money. Okay. And what they did this year, so that they didn't impact the salary, the GM's you know, salary cap situations, is instead of taking, you know, that 17th game and then adding it on to all the salary caps of all the rosters, they've decided to do add that to the players as just bonuses. Okay. So for example, Jared Goff is actually going to get the highest game check in the league this year, which is like $1.5 million because it's based off of his old contract. So, but that $1.5 million will not count against the Lions cap this season because of how they're applying it as like a bonus. Okay. So contracts that you make past here, though, like once you start making contract next year and you start using those game incentives and stuff like that, those were all going to be things that are going to be factored into a larger cap hit down the road. But for right now, they don't. Okay. And I believe a lot of the reason is that all the bonuses are based on what they call likely to be earned or unlikely or not likely to be earned. Okay. And they want to get everyone through a full 17 game season to then determine, are they likely to earn that game bonus or not? Like, and I think they can keep the fluidity of the contracts by delaying everything a year. I also don't think they didn't want to surprise, you know, because this was implemented after the salary cap was established, they didn't want to like throw a surprise gotcha on all these GMs as well. So for now, it's nice that they, nothing impacts the cap more. Players are still going to get extra money. And then next year we'll start talking about how that factors into the cap. But for now, it's fine. It's a win for the players and their pocketbooks.
All right. Next up, Rod, he hinted at, you know, the fact that, or somebody asked him one or the other that, you know, the Lions next year, they'll be 5 years without uniform changes. And so that maybe we'll see it next year.
Yeah. Justin Rogers noted that it's been 4 years since they had their last adjustment to any uniforms and said, you know, you're getting close to the point where you're going to have to start talking about new designs, or if you're going to upgrade the base uniforms, or if you're going to upgrade the color rush, or what you're going to do. And then that
change
would be
your colors completely.
Right.
Well, there's that sector of fans, right?
Sure.
The great part about being a Lions fan, there's all these, you know, small, see, I think it's ridiculous, but I really am in no place to say anything about that because I'm a cursed believer. So who am I to say that like changing the uniform colors, you know, is a dumb idea? You know, it could be a great idea. Maybe if they change them black and red, they'll start a steam plowing everybody. But you know, they're Honolulu blue and silver, and that's that. But I needed to bring that up when I saw that, you know, uniform changes, because there's always those people out there like they need to get away from the Honolulu blue and silver, you know. They're rollover colors. We need to have like stronger, more aggressive colors.
I mean, look, they tried that with the black, you know,
but that backfired because Millen was there.
Right.
You know, and he's a Raider and they wear silver and black. Like that's why that was never going to work.
I don't know. Right now their color rush jerseys are the all grays. Right, I think.
Yeah.
Right, I'm not even 100%.
They're all gray.
But
with the silver helmet, it kind of looks odd.
Yeah, but then they'll use those on non-color rush days, and then on the days that they should wear the color rush, they wear the throwbacks. And so it's a bunch of nonsense. We'll see what happens. There's a lot of people that really like it. I don't care. It doesn't bother me any which way.
Yeah, whatever.
We know people, me and you know people that go crazy over hats and shoes. You know what I mean?
Oh,
and so,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, and then there's a section of people that really like this and more power to them.
We root for laundry and you know, you'll buy new stuff and that's why they generate new stuff every couple of years. I get it.
Yep. It's all about that, getting that new, you know, jersey check into the Ford bank account. Right. So, all right. Yeah. So that's it. We have one more thing. I'm sorry.
More thing. Team's still in the mix to host the 2024 NFL draft, which, you know, whatever.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. You know, what's tricky is that right now it's got to be outdoors, right?
And it snowed today. Yeah. We're only a few weeks away from the draft.
As ridiculous as that is. But yes, but then again, look, this year they're outside in Cleveland. A couple years ago, they're outside in Chicago. So it can happen. I don't think Detroit will get turned away.
It'll be real nice.
The trick is, I think they're going to make the Lions, you know, typically it's tied to something, right? Like, oh, you got a new stadium. Okay, we'll try and get people down there. We'll host. Like, there's something that has to be tied to the excitement, typically. But I don't know. Like, there's a lot of reasons that Detroit, you know, makes it to the final couple of teams and then they miss out. And so we'll see. You know, the Super Bowl was here. It was awesome. I remember I went down to all the festivities down there. It was interesting. It was very cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah, it was fun. Fun weekend.
I think the draft would be equally exciting. You know, and it could be, it'd be good for the city, right? And so I understand why the Lions and Rod Wood are pushing so hard, because that would be a massive money generator for the city. And that's something that's at the forefront of what they want to accomplish.
All right. So that's it for the Rod Wood shed. Let's head over, talk about some draft trades, and Miami was involved in both of them. San Francisco traded up from 12 to 3. And so then Miami took that 12th pick and turned it into the 6th pick by making another trade with the Eagles.
Yeah. So, I mean, essentially the 49ers gave up 2 first round picks and some change to go get 3. Because they have a quarterback on their mind that they want. Then Miami took one of those picks they got. And then actually, I don't even think it was theirs. They might've took their own, but regardless, now that they had multiple first round picks, they took one of them and then flipped it to the Eagles to move back up to 6. Now, I don't think moving up to 6 was by accident. You know, I think they said, look, you know, we expect quarterbacks to go in the first 3. And then there's 3 guys in that next, you know, window that we like, and they want to get one of those guys. They jumped the Lions for a reason, right? What reason? I don't know. I mean, there's some arguments.
They
might
not even know. They might just have a hunch.
Right. But I mean, right? I think they've got an idea of like who's going to be there and who's not. And I think they have somebody in mind. I am not clear on who it is. Now, personally, as we sit here today on the first day of April, I think it's going to go – Lawrence is going to go first to Jacksonville. The Jets, who San Fran tried to trade with, and the Jets wouldn't even take the phone call. The Jets wanted to make that pick. Everybody believes they're going to take Zach Wilson from BYU because they weren't even willing to trade out or even consider trading out. So then Miami trades out, the 49ers trade up to 3. And the question and the word is that they have a quarterback that they want. They didn't want to miss him, and so that's what they're going after. Now the question is, which quarterback? Mac Jones from Alabama is kind of like considered the 5th quarterback, but there's a lot of people that say NFL teams like him better than the analysts like him. And there's a lot of people that say he's a terrific fit in the 49ers scheme, which I agree with. But Trey Lance also was a great fit in the 49ers scheme, and he is the guy with the higher ceiling. Mac Jones has the higher floor. Yeah, I know. So the question is, do they want the guy with the higher floor or the guy with the higher ceiling? Well, then for me, they are not moving on from Garoppolo. And Garoppolo has a $28 million cap hit or something like that right now. Mm-hmm. And if they're not going to draft Mac Jones, who's pro ready, and then sit him behind Garoppolo or let him challenge with Garoppolo and then maybe put a $24 million or $28 million quarterback on the bench. I think they want to keep Garoppolo around because they're targeting Trey Lance, because Trey Lance needs some more developmental time before he's ready. And so in my opinion, I'm leaning towards Trey Lance. I know Justin Fields is kind of getting just like washed over here. I don't know. It just seems like everybody's ignoring him. He could kind of be a sleeper for that pick. But they're going to get a quarterback. It's just a matter of which one. And my guess is that it's going to be Lance. So then the Falcons pick at 4, and they go a lot of different ways. I mean, they could take a quarterback, but Matt Ryan just restructured. So they can't get out from under him for a couple of years. And so I don't know if they're going to draft somebody to sit for 2 years when Matt Ryan's 38 and then try and replace him then. I don't know if they're just going to say, hey, we need a pass catcher in our offense because Julio's getting older. Ridley's in his last year of his deal. And our offense wasn't the same since we lost our tight end and Austin Hooper. And so maybe they're targeting a guy like Kyle Pitts, which would make a lot of sense to me. And then if Kyle Pitts is off the board, then since he's on the board next, they could take Sewell. They could take
their move's got to be get Sewell. I'm a Bengals fan.
But there's also word that Joe Burrow is making a strong push for Jamar Chase because the two teammate. Play together. Yeah. So I think it could be either one of those guys. And so then if Miami comes in, Miami might want the other one. You know what I mean? Like if one of those guys goes to Cincy, then one of those guys Miami might just snatch the other one up. Or maybe Miami's interested in Micah Parsons, which is kind of an unusual but probably accurate assessment. I don't know how much they are interested in him, but they very well could be. And so that leaves, you know, look where that puts the Lions. I mean, they could be sitting there saying, man, Sewell just fell into our lap. Or all of a sudden we have both Alabama pass catchers to choose from. Or maybe Chase falls to them, which I doubt because it seems like everybody wants Chase. Right. But like, what are the, like, it's a neat spot for the Lions to be in. And then to compound that, you got Carolina sitting right behind you who desperately wants a quarterback. And then Denver at 9 and the Patriots at 15 and Washington at 19, who all want to trade up to get ahead of Carolina potentially. So the Lions might be taking phone calls for that pick as well. So, you know, if quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, and then you start talking about other offensive players and the quarterback sitting there for the Lions, I think they're in a good spot. So these trades actually, I think, are probably going to help the Lions out because it's going to the odds are it's going to put at least 3 quarterbacks in the first 3 to 6, you know, in the first 3 picks there. And so that's a good spot for the Lions to be in. They're either going to get a guy that they want or they're going to get a guy. There are guys going to fall to them that they can trade with somebody to get out and get more picks. So either way, I'm comfortable with where they are. I actually like it. I think these trades help the Lions in the long run.
I would agree with you. No, I more or less agree. Like it's now I'm happy with all of you guys starting to let go of your Kyle Pitts at number 7 ideas. Now we're getting into some different territory, which I like. As you know, I'm a Sewell guy, and I get why a lot of people wouldn't want him because he's some offensive lineman. But I also would like the idea if they did trade back and got some more capital for it. So that's it.
Yeah. There's still a lot of options on the board. I think a lot of people saw that trade and thought, oh, this is bad news because the Dolphins are going to jump up ahead. Well, I don't think somebody else was going to pick whoever the Dolphins are going to take anyways, in my opinion. I still think the kind of top 5 or 6 guys are kind of set. So I think the Lions are not in worse shape and may even be in better shape.
The one thing, and as far as shape, I do agree with you. But the other thing is like the Lions need so much. Nobody's taking anything away from them.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Like, I mean, yeah, 10 years from now, we'll be like, oh, yeah, they took this Hall of Famer one pick before the Lions picked. And, you know, that's just part of the curse. But, the Lions have so many needs anyways. You know, if you're the guy that, you know, fan X or me or you like goes at 6, well, there's going to be somebody at 7 that they're going to be able to use. So, you know, I don't think that's – these trades, all this movement, and I don't think it's really that big of a deal for the Lions.
Yeah, I think they could trade back to 9 and still get a really good player. So like, let's say the Broncos want to jump Carolina. They could trade back and with the Broncos and still get an elite player. Look, if Carolina wants to trade up one spot to try and secure their guy, well, the Lions will do that too, I'm sure. So they're in a good spot. If they trade back to 15, now you're starting to get into a different tier of player. But again, like you said, they got a lot of needs. So they're going to end up with a starter. And, if you can get a starter plus more capital, even better.
All right, let's move on. We're going to look at the roster here. We're going to talk about what's happened so far throughout free agency and, you know, the trade season and what needs to happen at each position. Obviously, we'll start right at the top. We're at quarterback, Jared Goff. We didn't really talk about his contract restructuring. Oh, yeah, we did. We did a couple of weeks ago. We talked about his contract restructuring. Also, the addition of Tim Boyle from Green Bay.
Yeah, I think we talked about the fact that they needed to restructure him. I think the restructure happened since.
They needed money, I don't like it, but they needed money.
Yeah, but you know what? In the long run, here's what happens: they free up $20 million this year, and if he stays on the roster for 2 years, and then they decide to cut him, it's only going to cost him $10 million then, right? That's the bottom line. You're freeing up money now for not a whole lot of investment down the road. All it does is basically say it's harder to cut him next year. It's not harder to trade him, but it's harder to cut him next year. And again, in the long run, they needed to have some capital to get through the season. They needed to have money to sign their draft class, needed to have money for in-season moves. They didn't have that. Those things were non-existent at this point. And so, now they're able to do that. The Goff restructure, you're not giving up a lot to gain stuff that's necessary right now. Boyle seems to be the number two. Blau seems to be the number three. But do you think that they're out of the quarterback mix? Like, is quarterback now off the table because of the Goff restructure? Or do you think they still might end up drafting a quarterback, whether it's the first rounder or later? I mean, do you think quarterback's still on the table?
Yeah, well, probably is still on the table. Although Quinn's gone. Quinn said, yeah, I'd like to get a quarterback every year, or at least every other year.
Yeah.
I think it's still there. They're not going to, you know, Brad Holmes isn't going to show his hand. And how much do we really know about Brad Holmes as far as being a GM goes?
Right.
It's still on the table, but I don't know. I'd be 50-50. I wouldn't be shocked at all if they didn't add a young quarterback through the draft, and I wouldn't be shocked if they did. I'm not on the side thinking that, oh, they're definitely targeting a quarterback at 7.
Yeah, I don't think the Goff restructure takes them out of the mix, but I'm leaning more towards them being out of the mix, right? I still think there's that chance that they could take a guy because they look at this year's class and they say, hey, this guy fell to us and he's exactly what we want, and so we'll just take him and go. But I also, if they don't take a guy at 7, because they only have six draft picks currently, I'm not sure they'd use one of those picks on a backup quarterback down, you know what I mean, later in the draft. So if they don't pick a quarterback at 7, I think they're probably out of the quarterback mix the rest of the way. I've long said, if they restructure Goff, that's telling. And if they don't, that's telling. Well, they restructured him. And so for me, that tells me they're probably willing to kick the can on the quarterback for at least a year.
All right, moving on to the running back position. The big offseason acquisition so far is Jamal Williams from Green Bay, a 2-year deal. Adrian Peterson's also gone.
And so, look, that's he's going to be the number two. Swift is going to be the feature. Jamal Williams is going to be the number two. It's nice to, we've talked, you know, before a lot about Jamal and what a great asset he is. Kerryon's going to be the number three, but that's all they have, right? Everybody else is fullbacks at this point with Kabinda and Bowden. So they're going to need another running back. Now, I think they're going to try and target a guy in the draft if they can. And that's a staple of what the Rams did. They always kind of drafted a quarterback almost every draft. I'm sorry, running back right. almost every draft. So I do think they might be targeting a guy, but if it doesn't end up where they land one, I think they'd be comfortable adding a veteran after the draft as well. So at least one more running back is coming. They'll probably bring one in as an undrafted free agent as well. So I'm expecting two more to end up on this roster for training camp, at least two more. It'll just be, and I do think one is on the agenda in the draft.
All right. So look where we're headed here. And you and I are oddly somewhat in agreement as far as this offseason goes. Mm-hmm. We're going to get to wide receiver in a second, but I want to bring it up now. It looks like they're going to need to draft a wide receiver at some point during this draft. It looks like they're going to need to draft an offensive lineman. It looks like they're going to need to draft a running back. That's half your draft picks already, and the needs are on defense.
I know. Yeah, but the thing is they've been slowly kind of filling spots in. I think a safety in this draft is almost a given. I think a linebacker in this draft is a given. Can they get cornerback depth instead of like one of the other offensive positions? You know what I mean? Like if they take wide receiver, running back, and offensive lineman, then can you take linebacker, safety, and corner? You know what I mean? And then use your six picks that way. This is why I also think they're probably going to try and trade back, right? Because you need a starting safety. You need a starting slot receiver and maybe a contributing outside receiver. There's a lot of depth in other spots that you need. So I think running back is going to be one of those. And it wouldn't surprise me if they did kind of split it 3-3 and say, hey, let's get a tackle, let's get a receiver, let's get a running back, and then, you know, get three defenders as well. But, you know, when you kind of look at where the depth, like the defense is really what needs the upgrade, but the offense is really where the depth is needed. You need a couple of receivers. You need a running back. You need multiple offensive linemen because they want to roll three lines through the offense, and they don't even have two offensive lines through training camp. They only have two. They don't even have two right now. So, yeah, I think there's some depth issues on both sides of the ball. So it's not going to surprise me to see them kind of spread it out a little bit.
All right, the wide receiver group, obviously Kenny Golladay went to the Giants, but they've added Breshad Perriman, Tyrell Williams, Khalif Raymond, and Damian Ratley so far.
Right, so the theme here is speed, right? Perriman runs a 4.25, Tyrell Williams a 4.4, Raymond's a 4.34, Ratley is a 4.39. They're targeting speed, right? And the reason they're targeting speed is because they're hoping speed translates into separation, and separation is what Goff needs. And so that's what they're trying to do. Now, all these guys that you mentioned are on one-year deals, and that's why I think they're going to draft a receiver, at least one, right? If they acquire more picks and they can afford a second one, all the better. But they're all kind of on prove-it deals, right? They're all guys that are like – I think Dan Campbell said, look, they're guys that are hungry and they want to try and earn a spot. So we're giving them these one-year deals in this difficult salary cap year and trying to get, you know, let them earn a second contract. And I want to touch on the Golladay thing for a second here. But before we get back to that, I want to round this position out. So I have them needing a starting slot receiver and potentially like just a straight up number one, right? Like if they take a guy who can be the number one and is also capable of, or primarily coming out of the slot, then you can get two birds with one stone. But if they draft an outside guy, I still think they're going to need a slot guy at some point. You agree with that assessment?
Do you think that's I agree.
Okay. Okay. So with Golladay, he's going to, because of how the compensatory picks work, the totality of how your free agency period works, what types of players you lost versus what types of players you've added voluntarily, they kind of cancel each other out, and then if you end up losing more than you have acquired, you can end up with more comp picks. But there's all these nuances that go along with it. Like for example, Breshad Perriman his contract was up, so he will count when they signed him. He will count towards the compensatory picks. But Tyrell Williams was cut, so that was a voluntary cut. So he will not count in the comp pick formula, right? So when you look at what the Lions have involuntarily lost, they lost Kenny Golladay, Marvin Jones, Jared Davis, Jamal Agnew, and Matt Prater. Those are the five biggest contracts player contracts that they lost this offseason. But the biggest ones that they have taken on are just Jamal Williams and Perryman. So Jamal Williams' contract is on the same level as like Jared Davis, and Perryman's is on the same level as like Matt Prater's. So you're still left with Golladay, who the Lions are expected to get a third round pick for him. Marvin Jones, they're expected to get a fifth round pick for him. And Jamal Agnew, they're expected to get a sixth round pick for him. The Lions are in line to get three more picks next year through the compensatory process. And when you look at how their approach to free agency is playing out, they're not really giving out more contracts. And all the contracts that they're giving out right now are not high enough to qualify for the compensatory process. So I don't think they're going to add anybody that's going to like even cancel out a Jamal Agnew type contract. So I think they're going to go into next season and they're going to get at least three picks. The max you can get is four, but I think they're going to get three picks. So, you know, we're talking about building for the future. This is a way that they're going to, you know, acquire more picks in next year's draft. So if you get a third for Kenny, which almost everyone agrees you're going to, they're going to go into next year's draft with two firsts, a second, and two thirds. That's not a bad starting spot for next year's draft.
All right, moving to tight end. They retain T.J. Hockenson, Hunter Bryant, then Hunter Thedford and Alize Mack, where they're the at the bottom of the roster type of guys. And they also added Josh Hill from the Saints.
Yeah, so I think they can easily be done at tight end. They could potentially add competition for Hunter Bryant. But it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't address tight end at all.
All right, going down to the offensive line, the front five are unchanged from last season. Taylor Decker, Jonah Jackson, Frank Ragnow, Hal Vitae, and Tyrell Crosby, with Logan Stenberg, Evan Brown, Matt Nelson, Dan Skipper all still hanging around on the roster.
Yeah, so they lost Ode Abouche and they cut Joe Dahl, and they haven't added anybody. So right now you have nine offensive linemen. And they want
six more.
And they want to go in the camp with 15, right? So a lot of the times, two or three of those guys are undrafted guys. So you can kind of anticipate that. But that means you still got like three guys you got to fill in at some point. So maybe they get another veteran on a cheap contract.
Cuts, yeah, the June cuts or whatever.
Yep. Yep. Maybe they draft someone, which we think is something that's very likely, considering the right side and how tentative that right side is, especially contractually. And so I do think an offensive tackle or guard is going to be heavily in the mix on day two. And so, but they've got six guys, at least in my opinion, that they've got to add to this roster before camp.
Mm-hmm. All right. Flipping over to the defensive side of the ball. Starting with the interior defensive line, we'll start with the nose tackle. John Penasini returns. So does John Atkins, and they added Joel Heath. I don't know if that was near the end of the year. Or it was even after the year ended.
After.
Yeah. All right. So, but he's technically been around.
Like, yeah. And so they cut Danny Shelton
to game time.
So they cut Danny Shelton. Danny Shelton goes to the Giants, but because they cut him, he doesn't factor into the compensatory pick. But they haven't added anybody. And so this is a sneaky spot that they're going to need to add a player. So, you know, if you want to talk about adding draft picks, this is a spot where I could see them add a draft pick, even though I don't think it's a priority. Are you comfortable with John Penasini going out there for 40% of the snaps, or maybe 50% of the snaps, and then having Atkins do 10 to 20% of the snaps? It's a tough ask for those two guys. Wouldn't surprise me if they brought somebody in to help them.
All right. Over at the three technique or the other defensive tackle spot.
Yeah.
They've brought in Michael Brockers. They gave Nick Williams a pay cut, and Kevin Strong returns.
Yeah, Kevin Strong's a natural three. Michael Brockers is technically like a 4i, this is his scheme. And Nick Williams did take a pay cut to keep himself from getting cut. I think he was, of the eight guys that we identified, he was the only one that survived as a potential cap casualty. And the reason he survived is because he took a pay cut. Now he got more guaranteed money up front, but he took a loss on his total ability of a total earned money. Right. But he's going to stick around because of that. So he's going to be guaranteed to get his money in a tough financial year. If he would have got cut, who knows if he would have gotten the deal that he got with Detroit even after the pay cut, right? So it's a win for him. The Lions gained some money, and you know, it's still a 1-year deal for him. And you know, you bring some experience to the table.
All right, the big defensive ends: Trey Flowers, Sean Hand, Jayshon Cornell, and Robert McCray.
So this is where I'm kind of projecting Flowers to be like kind of an inside. He's going to work a lot between the 5 and the 3, in my opinion. When they talked about Trey Flowers, like when Aaron Glenn talked about Trey Flowers, the first thing he said was he can play the 3 technique. Oh, and he can play outside too. You know, like, I think in my mind, they're already looking at Trey Flowers to play the 3. Now, this scheme is going to be modeled off of the Rams in the front 7. Okay. And when you look at what they have and how the Rams, you know, operated, Michael Brockers is filling the Michael Brockers role, right? John Pennicini is filling the nose tackle role. So guess who's filling the Aaron Donald role? Well, that's Trey Flowers. It's an undersized defensive lineman who has a very quick initial first step, who can penetrate and take advantage of guards. I mean, that's what Trey Flowers can do. So I think they're going to take Trey off the edge, push him more inside, and ask him to kind of maintain that Aaron Donald role. And when he's not maintaining that Aaron Donald role, I think it's going to be Deshaun Hand in that Aaron Donald role. So I think that kind of 1-2 punch is kind of what they're hoping to use these two athletes to kind of fill in. Cornell is in the same mold as those guys. And so he's a former defensive end that learned how to play the 3 technique. So I think he's going to fit right in line with that. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if Flowers, Hand, Cornell are the Lions version of, you know, taking on that role that Aaron Donald had with the Rams.
All right, Sam linebacker. He got Romeo Aquara back on a new contract extension. Austin Bryant and Charles Davis is a free agent acquisition.
Charles Harris, right?
What did I say?
Davis. I was thinking Charles Davis too, right?
Charles Harris. Yeah. I'm sorry.
So these guys are all, if it was a 4-3, they'd be defensive ends. But it's not a 4-3. It's like a hybrid 3-3 or hybrid 3-4. And so in that situation, Aquara is going to be standing up, in my opinion. Austin Bryant will stay standing up. And I think Charles Harris is going to stand up more than he has in the past. Now, whether they're standing up or they put their hand in the dirt, it doesn't matter. And the fact that they're technically called the Sam position, it doesn't matter. It's a pass rushing role where they're going to be flanked out anywhere from the 7 to the 9, and they're going to be coming off that edge. And then on the flip side, you're going to have Romeo's brother, Julian, and probably Jelani Tavai and probably Pittman. I don't know what they're going to do with those two guys yet, but you know, Austin Bryant and Harris might flip on the other side as well at what they call the will. And those two edge guys, both of them can pass rush. They want both those edges to be able to pass rush or to kind of drop into a zone. And Harris, Aquara's, they can all do that. Austin Bryant, I don't know. He's going to have to learn it, right? But it's not too far off from what he's been doing at Patricia's jack position anyways. So it's going to be interesting. But is there room to add a guy? Sure. But do they need to add a guy? I mean, they have bodies. You know what I mean? It may not be the exciting pass rushing edge that you want. And I think they could definitely use a little bit more depth there. But I think the Lions are looking at this and going, we can make these four guys work as our edges.
All right, flipping over to that will linebacker spot you already mentioned. Julian Aquara, Jelani Tavai, and Anthony Pittman.
I don't know if Tavai goes there, to be honest. But I don't know where else to put him. You know what I mean? Because this team, this scheme prioritizes linebackers who can run. And that's not to buy. And they prioritize linebackers that can cover, and that's not to buy, right? And so I don't know where to put him because I can't put him off the ball. I don't think he fits there. He doesn't have the speed or the range or the coverage skills to sit there. he did a little bit of pass rushing in college. And so maybe they give him a shot to try there, but it wouldn't surprise me to see him end up being like, hey, the Lions are swapping picks with the Dolphins in the third round. And the Lions, you know, and Jelani Tavai is now going to Miami. You know what I mean? That type of thing, because he's a much better fit in that Miami or New England or Houston scheme than he is in Detroit. And I just don't know where to put him. And all honesty, I just, the way this scheme operates, he's kind of a nomad.
Yeah, no, not good for him. He'll probably miss the last regime very much so. All right, moving to the inside, Mike linebackers, Jamie Collins, Jalen Reeves-Maybin, and an open spot. And then the other inside spot, Alex Anzalone, who they brought in as free agent, and Sean Dion Hamilton.
Right, so here you have a Mike linebacker who's going to be on the field most of the time, and then you have you will often have a second inside linebacker. Now, the way this works is when they want to have four linebackers on the field, you have the Mike, the Sam, the Will in the inside. But most of the time, you're going to replace the Will with the inside guy. You're going to have one or the other on the field. And when they want to have all four of them on there, but they still want to stay in like a nickel secondary, that's when the nose tackle leaves the field, and it's just going to be the two down guys, the two edge rushers, and then the two inside guys. So in my opinion, like one of the pass rushing linebacker roles is going to be on the field about 50 to 75% of the time. The second off the ball linebacker role, which is the Anzalone role, is going to be on the field about 50 to 75% of the time. Whereas, all the other spots that we talked about, the defensive line and the Sams and the Mikes, those are going to be on the field quite a bit. So, but those, they use their other linebacker roles kind of as like part-time roles. So when you see like depth charts, you're going to see four of them out there, but they're not going to use four of them 100% of the time. They're very fluid in how they interchange what's happening in the front seven. And most of the time it's a front six. It's just a matter of, who's off the field? Is it the off the ball linebacker, the pass rushing linebacker, or the nose tackle? But I do think they need depth. Sorry, I should have added that. You've got four off the ball guys. Maybe you can add Pittman into that off the ball. He played Mike at Wayne State, but I think they're going to need at least one more. And this is another spot where I think they could draft somebody, or you know, because there's talent to be had. So. This is another position I think they should draft.
All right, moving to the cornerback position, and the names that remain on the roster are pretty well known. Amani Oruwariye, Jeff Okuda, Mike Ford, new addition, Corn Elder. Great, great name.
Yeah, Corn Elder played at Miami, was drafted by the Carolina Panthers in the fifth round. He was mainly a special teamer for the first 3 years, and then got on the field as a nickel last year, and he played so well as a nickel that he just kept earning more time. He's a very efficient tackler. He has pretty good instincts for a guy that they didn't use until year four, but he is the definition of a late bloomer. He's a guy who, you know, didn't do a whole lot for them, and then all of a sudden in year four, he was like, oh, hey, this guy can be our starter. He can be our starting nickel. And are the Lions looking at him as the starter, or is he possibly depth and they're going to draft the starter? I don't know. Ideally, I think it'd be in their benefit to add a nickel defensive back, whether it's a safety or whether it's a corner. I think he needs, you know, it can't just be him. They've got to add more depth here. But he's not a bad player, and he's going to come cheap. So you're still going to need more corner depth on the outside. You're still going to need corner depth on the inside. And then you're going to need depth at safety, which we're going to talk about as well. But yeah, this is now we're getting into the part where it's like, man, we need three more corners on this team. Probably three at least.
Yeah. See, the necessary players are certainly, they're mounting here. Yeah. All right. Moving to the safety position, strong safety, You got a gap shown at the starting strong safety position. Then Will Harris, Bobby Price, and Godwin Igwebukwe at free safety, Tracy Walker, C.J. Moore, Jalen Elliott.
Right. So I don't think they're comfortable with Will Harris, which is why I keep saying they need another starting safety. But here we are, and this is now the fourth defensive player that I've said they got to find, like, somebody who can contribute. So what I said, three on offense. Now I've talked myself into four on defense. So that's seven players they need to draft. They only have six picks. So again, I go back to the fact that they probably got to find a way to add at least another draft pick, or, you know, sign somebody who can take on one of these roles. If they do, there's still talent out there. There's still guys that are out there in free agency that they might be able to get on the cheap. Like, you know, it just depends on what the price is going to be and how far down it's going to be. Like, for example, Trey Boston, Kenny Vaccaro, Malik Hooker, those safeties are still out on the market. If they're willing to come in on like a cheaper deal, all those guys could probably start over Will Harris. And then at corner, you've got nickel corners like Desmond King, Brian Poole, Nicole Roby Coleman, right? And so there's guys like Quentin. They just brought Quentin Dunbar, or they're bringing Quentin Dunbar in, who's like an outside corner as well, was a starter in Washington 2 years ago and was excellent, one of the best cover corners that they had. Stumbled last year in Seattle, but you know, there's still veterans that are out there. So, and I know we're talking about needing, like, hey, these seven key spots need to be filled and there's only six draft picks. I do expect them still to keep adding in free agency. I just think they're waiting for the right prices on some of these guys. So they got six safeties. They need at least one, at least.
All right. And then for the specialists, Matthew Wright, Randy Bullock are the kickers. Jack Fox is the punter, and Don Muehlbach returns as the long snapper.
Yeah, you have another kicker battle in camp. Last year was a punter battle. This year it'll be a kicker battle. I don't see them using a draft pick on a kicker. When you only have six and all these other needs that we just talked about, you can't use capital that way. So, all right, to summarize.
There's probably 18 open spots.
Yeah. That's the ones that I've identified, right? So we talked about 18 different spots. They actually have 29 open spots on their 90-man roster, right? So they got 29 open spots on the 90-man roster. They've got 18 spots that we have touched on here. And so that leaves 11 spots that they can still fill in guys at wherever, right? You can add another running back. You can add a couple linebackers. You can add more corners than what we had talked about. You can add a couple more receivers probably as well. So it's going to go quick, but with 29 guys, you've got six draft picks. Now you're down to 23 guys, right? Then you're going to add like 12 undrafted free agents, I think, is a conservative estimate, right? That leaves you with 11 guys that you're probably still going to sign as free agents. Are my numbers right? Is it 29 guys that they need to sign?
Let's just say it is.
Yeah, roughly. It's like 29 or 27 or something like that. Regardless, they still need a handful of free agents, okay, is my point. They're not going to fill them all with draft guys. They're not going to fill them all with undrafted guys. You're still going to add a handful of free agents one way or another. I expect a couple more over the next 4 weeks to come in. I expect more after the draft as well, like you pointed to earlier, especially when guys get cut, right? Because that happens every year. Some veterans get cut and then they can be got for cheap. So, yeah, I mean, look, there's still talent out there, but everything's kind of shifting towards the draft now. The coaches are starting to talk more about the draft. The GMs are starting to talk more about the draft. The free agency period has slowed, where it's you're getting a guy once a week instead of like multiple guys a day type of thing. So, I think we need to start shifting our podcast towards the draft as well, right? As we talked about at the top. So, All right, so that's where the roster's at. Did I miss anything? Is there anything that you wanted to point out that
No, we got it covered for today.
I feel like we did cover a lot.
Yep, covered a lot of ground.
All right. So
that's it. Let's talk. You've pointed out earlier in the episode that we've boosted our reviews, which is great.
Yeah. We got two written reviews, one from Stinson JSD and one from Woo5. Is that right? Or is it Woof5? Or is it Woo5? I think the creativity of these names is beyond me.
They want you to think of it either way.
Like a Woo5? I like that. It's a good dog, you know, like you could name your dog that, right? That's a cool name. Like a high five. Like, okay. All right. I'm overthinking this.
Definitely are. And you're going to hear it from Woof 5.
Okay. Up to 357. I think I mentioned that, but that's terrific. I am staying up late after I put my kids to bed and working on my draft board. I am planning on having another installment out within the week, so that's my goal. If it's a little bit late, I apologize, but I'm trying to get the next kind of installment up, and then that way I can get one more in installment update before the draft in the next few weeks. And so if you are interested in that, that's through the Patreon that we have so many wonderful supporters on, and I want to get that out to people in enough time where they can have a few weeks to digest everything.
Yeah, no, and really take advantage of that board. It's in its infancy right now for this season, but it'll really fill in by the time the draft rolls around. Yeah. It's quite something to behold. All right. That's it. No, we appreciate everybody for listening. We hope everybody enjoys their weekend. Hopefully everybody enjoys us starting to roll into spring, at least for our northern hemisphere listeners. And that's all we got for this week. So until next time, let's go Lions.